Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
This November, Floridians will vote yes or no on allowing adults 21 and older to use recreational marijuana. That's after the state Supreme Court ruled a proposed constitutional amendment could stay on the ballot, despite pushback from Attorney General Ashley Moody, who argued the amendment could confuse voters. Getting amendment number 3 on the ballot cost a lot, and more than $40 million came from Trulieve, a medical marijuana company with a big footprint in Florida. I'm Matthew Petty, and today on Florida Matters, we'll discuss how the amendment could change life in the Sunshine State. Smart and Safe Florida, the group supporting the amendment, says there are good reasons to allow recreational marijuana in Florida. They point to the potential tax revenue from the booming cannabis industry. They say it will ease pressure on the criminal justice system, and the group says it will be better regulated and safer than what recreational users may be getting illegally. Here's Trulieve spokesperson Stephen Vancore talking about the potential tax revenue from recreational marijuana.
We would hope they wouldn't overtax it, because in states that have overtaxed it, what you saw was an immediate backlash and people went to the illegal or gray market, as it were. And so when you have a regulated market, you don't want to go to a point where you're so overregulated that people just go buy it on the street corner. Because here's the really important part of this. When you have an adult use market, right, cannabis market, like we're hoping to bring to Florida, it's regulated. It's third-party independent lab tested. It's safer.
But opponents say recreational marijuana will have a negative impact on public health and even quality of life. They say more young people will start using it and warn about public health risks like impaired driving and cannabis use disorder. Will Jones is the Director of Community Outreach and Engagement at Smart Approaches to Marijuana, or SAM.
Trulieve invested $40 million into collecting these signatures so that recreational use could be legal in Florida. You do that because you're not going to invest as a business $40 million into something if you don't think you're going to get a return on that investment. At the end of the day, there's a huge financial incentive for these marijuana businesses, companies, the industry to downplay the risks of this and to say that we're going to do it responsibly, to say that we're going to regulate it, to say it's going to be something good.
And you can hear more of our conversations with Will Jones and Stephen Vancore on our website, wusf.org. Well, we're broadcasting today from the Doctors Lorraine Rubis and Neil Frankel studio at WUSF. Joining us by Zoom is Tampa Bay Times Tallahassee correspondent Romy Allenbogen. She covers state government with a focus on criminal justice and health. Romy, thank you so much and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Also joined by Zoom by Richard Blau. He's an attorney with Gray Robinson and chair of the Regulated Products Division, where he oversees the firm's legal guidance, compliance, and support services for the alcohol, beverage, cannabis, food, and tobacco products industries. Richard, thank you so much for joining us as well.
I'm happy to be here with you today, Matthew.
Well, Romy, I want to start off with you, if I could. Can you remind us just what the amendment does? Who would be allowed to use marijuana recreationally, and how much would they be allowed to have?
Yeah, absolutely. So the amendment wouldn't allow just any adult to have recreational marijuana. You would have to be 21 years of age or older, and you could only possess up to 3 ounces. It decriminalizes possession up to that point. Possession beyond that could still be subject to criminal penalty.
And what about the issue of federal law regarding marijuana? Because clearly the federal approach to marijuana is different from states that have made recreational marijuana available, and this would be the case in Florida, right? So how would that work?
Yeah, I mean, like Florida, already sells medical marijuana. They could continue to sell through those treatment centers, the MMTCs that we already have set up, your Trulieve, your Curaleafs, so on. And it would just be that Florida itself, Florida law, Florida law enforcement agencies wouldn't levy criminal penalties against anyone for appropriate possession and use. As per federal law enforcement, if it's being violated, you know, on federal land, so to say, that would be a different arena.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned Trulieve, Curaleaf, and some of the other big players in the medical marijuana market. What about recreational? If this amendment passes, how and where will Floridians be able to get marijuana?
So Florida currently has 25 licensed medical marijuana treatment centers. Again, Trulieve, Curaleaf, there's also a couple for black farmers that aren't maybe big box retail stores. I think those are about three of the licenses. But the way the amendment proposes setting up the marketplace is you can just go to those same stores that already exist, that I think, you know, exist in plenty in every town, mm-hmm. and you can buy your recreational products there. It does leave the door open for the legislature to come back and decide if they want to license more entities or set up a different structure for recreational, so it's not just to the same people that Florida has already awarded contracts to.
I'm wondering too, Romy, how you might see this playing out when you think about other constitutional amendments that have passed in Florida, because lawmakers in this state have put a lot of restrictions about around some of those past constitutional amendments, like the rollout of medical marijuana, which we're talking about, for example, and other things like restoring voting rights for Floridians who served felony sentences. So I'm wondering what your sense is of how this amendment might work in practice if it passes.
Yeah, I mean, based on conversations I've had with lawmakers, it seems like what is most likely probably is capping the strength of the products. There was an attempt to do that this past legislative session, even ahead of the Supreme Court deciding to greenlight this for the ballot, to institute a 30% THC cap on smokable marijuana and other caps for vapes and edibles and other products. That ultimately didn't succeed, but I wouldn't be surprised if the legislature, now that it is on the ballot, comes back in 2025 and tries to set some regulations around that. As for kind of how the state reacted after the medical amendment passed, you know, they didn't allow smokable marijuana for 2-3 years, I believe. But this amendment specifically says for use by smoking. So that is explicitly carved in there. So I think they would have a harder time maybe prohibiting that.
Mm-hmm. Richard, let me bring you into this conversation. Florida already has a pretty robust medical marijuana market, as Romy was pointing out, some 878,000 patients or so. I'm wondering how big a difference you would see recreational marijuana making in Florida, given that we do have this kind of market already for the medical product.
So, Matthew, industry observers indicate through a number of different studies that they expect the Florida recreational cannabis market to expand and ultimately become perhaps the largest state market in the United States. That obviously would have an impact on a variety of issues. Some of them we've talked about briefly, taxes, for example, but also other issues in terms of the degree to which recreational smoking of marijuana is allowed in public or in places where the public gathers, and the impact that could have, for example, on tourism in Florida, which is a major economic driver for the state.
That explains, I mean, it's clear, as one of the folks we spoke to pointed out, that if you invest $40 million in getting an amendment on the ballot, there's got to be a return on investment. But you are sort of laying out pretty clearly what the potential benefits could be for some of these companies and some tax revenue on the other side of that as well.
Yeah, I think there may be a little bit too much attention paid to the amount of money that's spent on a ballot initiative. That process is never easy to begin with. Mm-hmm. It requires a substantial effort to collect and compile all the relevant signatures from residents in order to get the matter even considered, much less pushing it through the review process and ultimately the Supreme Court. I think what is more relevant to the discussion, regardless of which side you're on, whether you're pro or con on the issue of adopting the amendment, are the impacts that passage of the amendment would have on the state. And I think certainly companies, private industry, that have invested in this market, yes, they're looking for a return on investment, but there are other factors that citizens should take into account when they vote. Some of them definitely support approving the amendment. Some of them raise questions about opposing the amendment. And I think that's where the discussion really is most importantly had.
What about tax revenue, as you pointed out? I mean, some states where recreational marijuana was introduced, like Colorado, tax revenue didn't quite live up to what was projected. I'm wondering what you might see happening in Florida.
Yeah, Colorado and Washington State, and shortly thereafter Oregon, were some of the earliest states, along with California, to adopt some legalization of marijuana. And those states, by and large, were very cautious in taxation. But I think the mood of government has changed over time as the apparent popularity of legalizing cannabis has expanded across the country. In Illinois, for example, the very first day that the state legalized recreational marijuana, people were lined up, including the lieutenant governor of the state, to access the product. And the reports from the Department of Revenue of Illinois indicated that there were more than $3.5 million in sales just in one day. And the tax revenue in Illinois from that has generated literally hundreds of millions of dollars. So the notion that Florida, being an even greater market, or at least potential market, for cannabis, suggests that tax revenue may be a very, very important consideration in how the government deals with this issue should the amendment pass.
Romy, I wanted to come back to you for a moment. We spoke briefly about medical marijuana, but can you just remind us like how it works? What's the process for getting a card, a medical marijuana card, for example, right now?
Yeah, so in Florida, if you want a medical marijuana card, a doctor needs to sign off on it. And it can't just be any doctor. It has to be a doctor specifically, you know, trained and who has the licensure, the proper licensure for a medical marijuana card in the state. State statutes for medical marijuana lists out a couple of conditions that should qualify. Things like cancer, PTSD, you know, a variety of chronic illnesses and chronic pains. But it also gives physicians leeway by saying that any other similar condition can qualify for a card. So it's sort of ultimately dependent on who you're seeing and if they decide you should qualify or not. Mm-hmm. And they'll be the one to set your, you know, appropriate dosage that you're able to buy.
And the medical marijuana industry as it stands in Florida is vertically integrated. So that means that you have to grow it if you want to sell it. Companies do have to invest a lot of money to set up shop here. And the state of Florida has been quite miserly about awarding licenses to grow and sell medical marijuana. Romy, do you think recreational marijuana could sort of change that structure at all?
Again, I think that there is potential interest. It came up during oral arguments where the attorney representing the attorney general's office, you know, argued that this amendment could mislead voters into thinking that the marketplace structure is changing, that it's going to bring more people into the fold. And ultimately, Chief Justice Muniz was sort of skeptical of that and thought, well, who would be in favor of this amendment, but would vote against it, you know, would vote against recreational use because they disagree with the marketplace structure. Mm-hmm. I feel like big sweeping changes to the marketplace are tough, and lawmakers have sort of alluded to that, that their first priority will be really looking at capping the strength of products for consumers. There could be an appetite, but, you know, at least in the sort of immediate run-up, it looks like it will stay through the medical marijuana marketplace. There are 22 new licenses that will be awarded potentially some point this year, which could bring more people into the fold, but it doesn't change that vertical integration structure.
Mm-hmm. Richard, I wonder what your kind of perspective is on this. Are you anticipating a lot of companies kind of eyeing Florida and saying, we think there's an opportunity here? We don't have a position here yet, but this could be a place for us to set up business.
I think so, Matthew. In just the few moments that we last talked about it, I went online to check, again, using Illinois as an example. In this past, well, the year from July of 2022 to July of 2023, Illinois had over $1.5 billion in sales and $451.9 million in tax revenue. You mentioned return on investment earlier. Those are pretty attractive numbers to private industry that would make Florida a very attractive market. In terms of the structure that you and Romy were talking about, I agree with her. I don't think there's going to be significant change to the vertically integrated structure that currently exists, although I do believe that what we're going to see is Florida government clamping down and potentially shutting down the existing marketplace that exists for what's called Delta 8, Delta 10, and synthetic cannabis, synthetic THC products. The current commissioner of the Secretary of the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services is on a campaign to really restrict those activities. Wilton Simpson feels that those products are especially attractive to younger Floridians and wants to see a number of regulatory restrictions imposed to really cut back on their availability and how they're marketed. Some of this will be changed by a law that is currently on the desk of Governor DeSantis. It's not clear yet whether he's going to sign that law, whether he will veto that law, or whether he will allow that law to become law without his signature. But if it does become law, it's going to impact that other component of the Florida marketplace, the one that deals with products that are typically sold in vape shops and tobacco shops that are advertised as being Delta 8 or Delta 10 or containing synthetic cannabis. Mm-hmm. That could be severely restricted.
You're listening to Florida Matters. We're talking with Gray Robinson attorney Richard Blau and Tampa Bay Times reporter Romy Allen Bogan about how recreational marijuana could change the Sunshine State. More when we come back. Welcome back to Florida Matters. I'm Matthew Petty. Let's get back to the conversation about the potential impact of recreational marijuana on Florida. Residents will vote in November on a constitutional amendment to allow adults 21 and older small amounts of marijuana for personal use. Opponents like Will Jones of Smart Approaches to Marijuana say Floridians should vote no.
This is not the direction that Florida wants to go for public health. We're seeing rising rates of cannabis use disorder or addiction. We're seeing rising youth rates in states where it's been legalized, and we're seeing rising rates of fatal car accidents and people driving under the influence of drugs.
But Stephen VanCore, a spokesperson for Trulieve, the medical marijuana company that poured $40 million into supporting the amendment effort, says regulating recreational marijuana will be a lot safer.
You've heard the governor and others speak about, we don't want Florida to become the stinky state. We strongly mm-hmm. agree with that. And we feel strongly that the legislature should regulate as they're allowed. It's clear in the amendment, it's clear in the Florida law, it's clear in the Florida Constitution. They can regulate time, place, and manner of consumption.
Well, we're speaking with Romy Allen Bogan of the Tampa Bay Times and Gray Robinson attorney Richard Blau. Romy, let me come back to you for a moment. I want to talk more about what Richard was alluding to before the break, the bill out of the legislature this year that would ban Delta 8 and other hemp products. I mean, there is a pretty big industry already in Florida that supports that. So what are the concerns there from the industry? What were you hearing from lawmakers saying we need to clamp down on this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the big industry concern, I think, has been that they a trade commission that represents all of these sort of hemp stores across Florida commissioned a study in 2022. And so it is their own commission study, but that found that there's about $10 billion in this industry. So they, as this bill was moving through the process, came up and told lawmakers, you know, there's hundreds to thousands of employees across Florida who could be put out of work if we dismantle this. A big point of opposition from Democratic lawmakers. And this bill also had, you know, a fair bit of Republicans who voted against it as well, but was the argument that this is a giveaway, in a sense, to the medical marijuana companies ahead of what is likely the vote for recreational marijuana. Mm-hmm. And then there was concern, of course, from consumers who use these products.
Right. So. The opposition was saying, look, you're paving the way for these medical marijuana companies to pivot to recreational if this amendment passes. Was that the kind of gist of it?
Yeah, it was sort of, you know, these products could, in theory, still be sold, but under the banner of a licensed medical marijuana distributor in the state versus a hemp store. And if it's the same product, why aren't you banning it through the regulated system, you know, when the hemp system is also regulated. Mm-hmm. But to sponsor Tommy Gregory's point, he said people are making a lot of money in this industry because people make a lot of money selling drugs, I believe was his quote. And he just thought they were an intoxicating product that shouldn't be sold in the way they are, sort of through stores and gas stations and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, lawmakers were already on the offensive in case the amendment passes, right? And you mentioned the kind of attempt or the push to cap THC levels in weed ahead of this amendment going before voters. What can you tell us about that? I mean, what happened with that bill and what does that tell you about how things might play out if the amendment passes?
Yeah, in that bill's initial form, it would have essentially made it very difficult for anyone to really sell recreational marijuana in the state because it capped THC use for smokable at 10%, which is much lower than sort of the standard baseline of medical products, which I believe sort of vary between 25 to 30% THC. It was amended later by the Republican sponsor, who did bring that cap up to 30%. In the end, it sort of failed. It came towards the end of the session and just didn't make it through all the hoops it needs to get through in time. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't be surprised if it, you know, arises again with maybe a 30% THC cap. And I think some of the language about how specifically to regulate vapes was still being worked out.
Richard, bringing you back into this conversation, I mean, we heard from an opponent who says, look, this is going to make our roads less safe if recreational marijuana is allowed in Florida. Can you just explain for us how impaired driving when consuming alcohol might compare to impaired driving under the influence of marijuana? Like, there are legal limits for alcohol. What about marijuana?
Yeah, that's a very good point, Matthew. For decades now, there have been accepted limitations on driving under the influence, driving while intoxicated, DUI, DWI, that can be measurable. In Florida and now every state in America, it's 0.08 BAC, meaning blood alcohol content. And there are existing technologies available for roadside testing, non-invasive testing to determine whether a driver meets or exceeds that threshold. That doesn't exist for cannabis. So it's much more difficult for law enforcement to deal with efforts to interdict a driver who's under the influence of cannabis before a tragic accident occurs. Now, there are data, a lot of data, on accidents that have occurred and the assessment of cannabis influence after the fact. And those studies show significant increases in marijuana-related traffic accidents that required, for example, treatment in an emergency room. There's a study out of Canada where marijuana was legalized across the country years ago, so they've got pretty good data to work with. And their study found an increase of 475% in marijuana-related traffic accidents that required emergency room visits between 2010, when marijuana was legalized in Canada, and 2021.
On the flip side of that, though, I mean, is there any evidence showing that it may be taking a bite out of traffic accidents involving people driving under the influence of alcohol? Like, is there some kind of leveling effect there?
To my knowledge, nobody's done a comparative analysis. For the last couple of years, DUI, DWI incidents involving alcohol have been declining, according to U.S. federal statistics. But I'm not aware of anyone that has attempted to compile data in the United States relating to cannabis incidents and then contrasting it against alcohol incidents to determine if there's some sort of shift. I will say that within the alcohol industry, which Greg Robinson has some knowledge and experience with through the legal work we do, there is some concern economically and from a market perspective about how cannabis will, in effect, take market share away from alcohol to the extent that consumers exhibit a preference for marijuana over alcohol as their recreational source of entertainment.
We heard also this kind of pushback to the idea of Florida becoming the quote-unquote stinky state, and proponents of the amendment say, look, lawmakers can regulate this however they want to. They could do it the way they do with tobacco, which is, you know, there's a lot of restrictions on where you can and can't smoke. But, I mean, are there some implications for Florida in this amendment if it passes of Florida's image as this sort of beachy tourism destination?
There are. Florida has worked hard to cultivate an image that's attracted to tourists. So it's an image that the state is family friendly. It's an image that the state has environmentally attractive resources like our beaches, for example. And a question that some observers of these activities, these legislative activities, have a question about, well, how will this affect those perspectives? How will they affect the reputation that Florida has? What will happen, speaking of stinky state, if marijuana becomes recreationally legal and people start going to our Florida beaches and smoking marijuana? It's a very pungent smell. It travels a lot further than tobacco smoke because of its pungency. And that may be a significant turnoff for families and others who just find the smell of cannabis to be not so favorable. How will that be regulated? You can pass a law that says no smoking on the beach, but the question becomes, how do you enforce it?
I guess the other side of that argument too, and this is, again, something you'll hear from the folks backing the amendment, is like Florida could add it, you know, marijuana to its kind of list of amenities as a tourism feature, like this idea of marijuana tourism being something that could bring in extra revenue for Florida. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think there's certainly some of that activity going on in a number of states around America, and Florida would be a natural for that. Growing marijuana, growing cannabis, is something that could be adapted to the same model that growing grapes and making wine worked so well in California. You could have a Florida equivalent for marijuana to California's Napa Valley, and that would certainly attract tourism. Growth of cannabis, farming cannabis agriculturally, could be a huge boon for Florida. As I think most people know, over the last generation or two, our citrus industry, which used to be the pride of the world, has taken a tremendous hit because of citrus greening, a disease that really has wiped out a good number of Florida's citrus groves. Cannabis and marijuana farming could very well be a lucrative replacement for some of the citrus groves that are no longer generating any kind of economic return.
Are you seeing some evidence that there's kind of agricultural interest kind of eyeing the land for that at this point?
Yes. Yes, we've worked with several investors and several farmers, producers, that believe strongly that there is a bright future for cannabis farming in the state of Florida because of the climate, because of the availability of land, especially in the northern part of the state. The answer is definitely yes.
Mm-hmm. Romy, just in the final minute or so we have here, what are you going to be watching for between now and November with regard to this amendment?
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see sort of what polling tells us, which I, you know, try not to put too much stock in polling, but as it gets closer, I'll be interested to see how people's ideas of this change. It's so early now, you know, I'm curious also to see how these campaigns message to Florida voters, both for and against the amendment, and how that impacts what people ultimately do come November.
Mm-hmm. And Richard, how about yourself?
I'm going to be watching to see how government, the legislature, maybe the regulators at the Department of Health, the Office of Medical Marijuana Use, and the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Safety, how do they deal with the potential risks and issues associated with the big increases in adolescent vaping?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there are studies that show that cannabis vaping is on the rise, especially with teenagers? That could be potentially a huge factor in swaying the minds not only of voters for this amendment, but of regulators and government in terms of future oversight of the industry.
Well, we've been speaking with Richard Blau. He's an attorney with Gray Robinson and chair of the Regulated Products Division, where he oversees the firm's legal guidance, compliance, and support services for the alcohol, beverage, cannabis, food, and tobacco products industries. Richard, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Also with us, Romy Allen-Bogan, Tampa Bay Times Tallahassee correspondent, covering state government with a focus on criminal justice and health. Romy, thank you as well.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's our show for this week. Blake Bass engineered this episode. Our executive producer is Grayson Doctor. Subscribe to Florida Matters wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.